Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. Joining him is everyone's favorite coach and hair model, Chris, aka Tex McQuilkin, Power Athlete's Director of Performance. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Power Athlete Nation, welcome to another episode of the premier podcast in strength conditioning, Power Athlete Radio. John and I are on the road again to sit down with legendary Dr. Eric Serrano at his Ohio home to swap stories after decades of empowering performance of athletes all around the globe. Dr. Serrano's client list includes a wide array of athletes from the NFL, NHL, MLB, in addition to countless elite amateurs. His cohesive expertise comes from years of practicing medicine, and his career as a record-breaking powerlifter. As an athlete and a family man, Eric understands the needs of his clients and pushes himself to stay on the cutting edge of training, supplementation, nutrition, injury rehabilitation, and performance enhancement. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to a special episode of Power Athlete Radio. We are on location with Dr. Serrano, sitting in your house in Columbus, Ohio.
Keep it that way.
Okay, yeah. At an undisclosed location in the Columbus, Ohio area. We are here to talk about performance, what's going on in the world of supplements, and really just get to understand Dr. Serrano, who I've heard speak many times at Sornex, and never got the opportunity to come up and talk to you, because you're like a hot chick at the prom with all these groupies around you. It's almost to the point where I just like, it's too much. Like, oh, Dr. Serrano, my big toe hurts. Okay, you're going to touch your eye, you're going to spin it three times, and you're going to go over this. But I have always enjoyed your presentations, and I know Brian has spoken very highly of you, so thanks for having us over at your undisclosed location. And
thank you for being here, guys. I'm very interested in what you guys are doing, which is new to me, which is pretty sad, especially after we were sitting on the table discussing and throwing names here and there, and the connection that we have is insane. I mean, it's crazy. We're talking about a guy from the past, a really old guy, that if he's listening, I'm going to give him hell, Toto Di Pasquale, which actually he was kind of a mentor to me. And before you guys go to that, I'm going to show you, he sent me a bunch of books, signed everything, and, you know, he helped me a lot, actually. Maro, when I finished my medical school, he was one of the guys that I looked up to. And, of course, the experience and the knowledge that this guy had was impressive, that I still have.
So the old power lifter that trained me in high school was a guy named George Zangus, who owned Marathon Nutrition.
Okay.
Who invented the super suits and the wraps. And he and Morrow were friends. And so, years later, when I ended up getting introduced to Morrow by my agent, was a guy named Ed Cunningham.
Okay.
And so he introduced me to Morrow, and then I knew, George and Morrow had been good friends. And then Louis Simmons and George were good friends. And so it's a very, very small community within this. And I think there's a lot of charlatans and bullshitters, but there's a lot of really good people. I mean, Morrow's... So he originally does the supplement deal for me. And then when I hurt my knee and I was rehabbing, he's like, hey, let me do your diet stuff.
My real diet was awesome.
Oh, yeah. And he bulked me up to like 325 pounds. And then we cut. and I cut down to about 306, and I was the only person at that time who was over 300 pounds that was under 10% body fat in the bod pod. So
wow.
I was 7.9, 8.1, 2, because the guy didn't believe it. So we did it back to back. I was 7.9, 8.1 in the bod pod at 306. So it's 282 pounds of lean muscle.
That's very impressive.
So Mauro's diet, I mean, we bulked up, anabolic stuff, I mean, refeeds, the whole deal, then we cut it, we did everything, and he's like a fucking wizard. And and so I have the version of the anabolic diet that Mauro and I did. So I've obviously, like, you know, worked and used it on very many on people, and it's always reaps the benefits that I want to.
The anabolic diet is one of the most impressive diet. I would say, then Mauro got hired, that's when we talked a lot, he got hired by the WBF or something like that, World Bodybuilding, so that's a Jim McMahon or somebody created, and then he got hired to be the main guy for those bodybuilder guys. I don't know if you know this, and they wanted to stop steroids, period. They didn't want any bodybuilder on steroids, and Mark was going to do the diet.
Yeah.
And there was a guy named Mike Quinn, who was a bodybuilder.
Yeah, out in California.
Yes, and Mark said, do this, and Mike Quinn said that his diet didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, he never did it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because here I am, I'm using Mauro's diet with patients, which, you know, it was incredible. And here I see the results, you know, which actually Mauro took the Atkins diet and he modified for athletics performance, which was impressive.
Well, the one thing that it like really was revolutionary for me with Mauro was the food quality issue.
Yes.
So we started talking about Vince Ferrara's Stone Age diet, and we basically, it was a paleo diet. Which, you know, if you're I literally just referenced this the other day, but Dr. Michael Rose, who's an evolutionary biologist at UC Irvine, he gives an incredible talk about, you know, with fruit flies and the idea that as you age and you reach a certain point, you have to return to your ancestral diet, which is like a paleo diet. And so Mauro, I mean, you know, was talking about, you know, the Stone Age diet, you know, Zangus' deal where nobody got strong eating out of a vending machine, food quality is this.
Mauro will talk about known as a carnivore diet. Mauro was doing that years ago.
Oh, I mean, you know, that's that, the modified protein fast.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, all of these things we used in this trick to try to, like, you know, because it was like $10,000 we were betting on this bod pod thing.
Okay.
And he tricked, I mean, like, literally, we did everything in the world to get me into this thing. And winning it at, you know, I mean, 282 pounds of lean muscle at, you know, 306.
That's a big human being.
Yeah. I mean, it was it was impressive, and but it was all diet. I mean, we had a ton of tricks, and so I was pretty sharp on writing all this stuff down and remembering a bunch. And so
I'm pretty impressed with your knowledge and how you use your brain for being a football player. By the way,
I'm so surprised. Why, you don't think football players are intelligent?
Not that they're intelligent, but they tend to use. Let me use my physical power and forget how to use my brain later, which is really important because after you stop playing, it's kind of funny. What do I do now?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting piece. I mean, that everybody has to go through. I mean, I was very fortunate when I retired from the NFL. I mean, literally, out of my 10th year, I went and I played for the New England Patriots, and it was a really shitty deal in that, like, we're in the last preseason game. You're going to appreciate this one. And I went in, I played the first two series, and we were done. And then one of the young guys went out. Like, two of them got hurt. And all of a sudden, there's like 6 minutes left in the game, and they're like, one of the young guys gets hurt, and they're like, hey, somebody has to go back in.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, not the, you know, like, I mean, these guys were all about the same age, but they'd all been there longer. And they were like, hey, you're the odd man out, so I have to go back in and play the final 6 minutes. And, like, you know, I got no tape on my hands. I basically had taken all my stuff off. So I'm like, oh, shit, I put my gloves on, put my shoulder pads on, go in, totally cold, go out and play. And as I was running, I, like, took a funny cut, and I felt a crunch in my knee. And I had a piece of, like, kind of shitty scrotted bone that chipped off, sheared off, and got stuck in the joint. And all of a sudden, I got up. I went to the ground. I, like, you know, hit a guy, got up. I felt a crunch, and my knee wouldn't unlock. And I was like, and I did this, and I felt something pop out. I was like, oh, fuck. And so I just kind of, like, hobbled and finished the game. Figured I would say anything because I had, you know, started every game my NFL career had never been cut. I figured, oh, fuck, I'll just play next week after I get through the first game and I'm vested, I'll say something. And then they called me like 2 minutes, you know, 4 o'clock or whatever, 3 o'clock, and said, hey, we got to release you, but we're going to re-sign you tomorrow and make a roster move. So I was like, all right, so I hung out for the day. They re-signed me and they made me go back through the physical. And the doctor's like, your knee, what's going on here? And I'm like, He's like, why didn't you say something last night? I'm like, well, I've never been cut. And like, fuck. So they didn't re-sign me. I came home and had knee surgery. And then when I was rehabbing on the couch, I went to Berkeley. So I graduated in 4 years and I worked on my master's in my fifth and was planning to go to law school. So that was, I figured, how long do you play football, right? Like a year or two? So I go to law school. That turned into a decade. So then I was sitting there and I was like, well, I guess go back to law school. So I started kind of rebooting that. And then the phone rang and it was Greg Glassman. And he called me on the phone and said, hey, I want you to come help us develop our technology on how to train athletes.
And that's how you started.
And so I asked him, I was like, so I'd never thought about training as a technology. And I thought it was really interesting that he viewed CrossFit as a technology and that he didn't understand how to train athletes. And then I went out there, I went and met with him and I explained to him, I'm like, hey, this is what I understand about athleticism. This is understanding how to move through space. And this is where your program is deficient. Like we talked about, nothing but bilateral hip hinging and a sagittal plane.
The body was meant to rotate, period.
Yeah.
That's how you hunt. That's how you do everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that there was no rotation other than like virtual shoveling in CrossFit. And I was like, people, and he made a great comment to me. He said, people fail at the margins of their experience, which is what his excuse was for why his program was that way, because he was a polio-stricken gymnast who had one leg that was 4 inches shorter than the other, and he couldn't squat. He had no glute muscle. So all of the programming with CrossFit was designed around things that he could effectively do. So, okay. So the whole program.
So he took his weakness and put it into everybody's weaknesses.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so he sat down and, they started training people and they figured out that, everybody, he could go look at Boyd Epley's and, Dr. Kramer's research on lactate bathing. And he figured out that, high intensity exercise and this lactate response elicited positive benefits. And he didn't necessarily know what he was doing. It was actually Rob Wolf.
I didn't even know Rob Will was involved in that.
Oh yeah, he was one of the original people in CrossFit, so I met Rob. And Rob actually, as they were talking about it, was like, hey, is this like GPP, like what the West Side guys are doing? And that's when Glassman latched on to the sport of GPP and they started talking about GPP. And then when they reached out to me, my whole deal was like, you guys are trying to bring this into athletic performance, but you don't understand how to train athletes. So then he said, you understand it, you go do it. And so we had this thing called CrossFit Football, which was a terrible fucking name. They called it CrossFit Football, obviously, because I played football, but it was more about like how to train athletes. So okay. We launched it, 17,000 hits the first day, and we taught a seminar a month later, and we proceeded to teach.
How long ago was that?
2009 to 2017.
I want to say something. You know who started the GPP? Who named it that? That was the first time ever. It was Ian King. That's kind of interesting.
Well, the first time I ever read about it wasn't in CrossFit. It was in Super Training and also Science and Practice.
Actually, Ian King was the first person that used that in 1982. He put it on a paper and he called it GPP,
General Physical Preparedness.
Yeah, but he named it that, and he was going to put a trademark and everything. Ian King is actually another good friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was kind of funny because we were talking and there were some issues, political issues, like always, between him and another person, right? And then some of the handwriting notes that I saw that Ian showed me himself, I said, what is this? How long have you had this? I said, and he showed me research references and all that stuff. And my wife is making fun of me, by the way. But I was pretty impressive how this guy that I didn't know them had all the history of behind. Like, he was the first person that even referred to time under tension and gave eccentric, positive, all that stuff, numbers. I said, what is this? How come I published this? And then he showed me certain notes and books that were used by another person that he wrote. I'm like, what the hell? Right. And then that's when we became good friends.
Yeah. No, well, yeah. I mean, like we've always said, you stand on the shoulders of giants. But working with the CrossFit thing was by far the most impactful thing that I could have ever done. Because one, I wasn't a strength coach, I was an athlete. But now I was put into this position of like being able to try to educate people. And we showed up, we taught 36 seminars that first year, 2-day seminars.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun because I got to work things out in real time. And every weekend we got different athletes. So I had the really amazing ability of literally seeing 50 athletes, brand new people, every single weekend. I had to walk in a 2-day seminar, show up with people I didn't know anything about, find ways to assess them, and then figure out how to get them to lift weights and move through space in 2 days. And we developed, like, everything that we did with Power Athlete was developed in real time by trying to figure out, like, how do we save these people from themselves? And then the bigger issue we ran into is everybody that we were working with, we started developing models. And, you know, these are warm-ups, like, these people can't do this and this. And we realized that where they were deficient, because everybody had the same deficiencies. And you realize if you put people into a broken model like CrossFit, eventually everybody's going to have the same deficiencies. And then
they're going to break down.
Yeah. And then we started basically fixing all of the pieces. And then once we started having a little bit of, like, organic traction, 2 or 3 years, 4 years down the road, all of a sudden the people that were following my training were showing up to the seminar. And then we would basically separate them from the people that were CrossFitters from ours. And then how come our people can do everything that I'm asking them to do, but the CrossFitters can't do anything? And it became, like, a really interesting, where you just saw this separation. And then people were, you know, all of a sudden people started using the program and kids were getting scholarships. And all of a sudden we just saw it explode. And it really, you know, and you know, then we're at a meeting and Glassman was absolutely shit-faced. And he screams at me, "You virally infected and you ruined CrossFit. You started convincing people they needed to be strong." Because you have to remember, before my programming came in, CrossFit just had one random workout a day. And when we came in, I started implementing a periodized strength conditioning template, strength template, and then using the metabolic conditioning piece, like the, you know, what CrossFit was doing. It's just short conditioning, 7 to 10 minute workouts, swing some stuff, you know, single, double, triplets, you know, all this different deal. And we just started lifting heavy weights, doing a bunch of accessory work, and then short 7 to 10 minute little conditioning workouts.
No running 5 miles.
Yeah.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market.
We've built our online training business by partnering with Train Heroic and helping us deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jackstreet, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training.
And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best tech and training, go to trainheroic.co/powerathletehq.
No, it was all sprints, short, change of direction. I mean, but it was, and then everybody got big and strong and people were killing it. And then all of a sudden, like, every CrossFit gym you walked into had a periodized strength template mixed with a short conditioning deal.
Well, maybe not periodized, but a strength workout of the day.
Well, when I use the word good periodized, ones. I mean,
variables. I
use the word periodized as in the idea of, like, a progression. You know, the idea that we're just not going to randomly program strength into the mix. Just strength.
That's what they do now.
Yeah. Well, now, but back then they'd be like, "Hey, we come in today. We're going to squat 5x5. Tomorrow we might run a 5K, and then we might not squat another 5x5 for 3 years."
Okay.
Right. So I mean, that was the CrossFit programming, and I was like, "How can you randomly get good at anything?" I was like, "If anything, this is like the like a program for mediocrity," and that didn't work for me. I wasn't trying to be mediocre at anything.
To be honest, it's a sport that I see the most injuries.
Yeah.
CrossFit is crazy how many. Well, I'm lucky enough that I see a lot of them.
But I think the problem is, just like professional sports, right? There's certain people that have a physical adaptation or genetic propensity to be able to survive the sport. You know, like people talk about all the time, like pro football, I mean, as we know, is probably like the greatest, like, weeding out process. By the time you get there, you're already able to handle the volume of hits. You're big enough. You're strong enough. I mean, it's basically a weeding out process. It's a world's greatest meritocracy, right? But with CrossFit, anybody can walk in and do it. Right, but think about it. like that. That would be like, imagine if we had a bunch of little gyms that played full contact football every single day, and people could just walk off the street, and you're like, "Fuck it, you're playing running back," and then people just get imploded.
I thought that's what it is.
Well, that's what it is, right? And then when you start adding these different variables, and you're asking these people to do a lot of the movements, I mean, the people that are really good at it, that are professionals, they don't have the injuries. I mean, and if you look at it, they're naturally selected out, right? The girls are always former gymnasts, because the gymnast can handle that volume, and the guys tend to be, you know, 5'7", 5'8", 5'9", 185 pounds, former athletes that can handle a ton of load. And they're usually like big monkeys, to quote, who was the pose guy? Yeah, Romanoff. So you know Dr. Romanoff?
I know who he is. I had never met him.
So Dr. Romanoff, I don't agree with his pose stuff, and we argued a bunch because I thought that, like, just lifting your foot off the ground and using gravity to fall forward never made sense in sprinting, especially when I hear people running and I can hear the, you know, the spikes going in the ground. And I always understood, like, put your foot in the ground and drive your way through. But he actually told me two stories that I think were probably some of the most impactful things I've ever heard in the strength conditioning world.
What did he tell you?
The first one was he talked about that there was a study they did years ago with various monkeys in a cage.
Okay.
And they observed all these different monkeys, and what they found was that there were certain monkeys that, like, played and swam and jumped and did this and battled and fought for like 20 hours a day. And they had to, like, you know, so they would take those monkeys, and there were other monkeys that only moved enough to, like, eat. So then what they did is they basically switched the environments. They put the monkeys that only like to move enough to eat, and they put them into a situation where they had to move all day. And then they took the monkeys that like to play and do everything, and they basically locked them in cages, and they couldn't do anything, like, trap their bodies. So then at the end of it, the monkeys that needed to move all the time got out, and they just basically ran at each other and basically beat each other to death. The other monkeys that had to move, or only moved enough to eat, basically just laid down and died. And so they developed a whole theory on what they call big monkey, small monkey, was that there's certain athletes, and what he related it to was athletes, certain athletes can handle much more load than other athletes. And we see it naturally select in pro football.
Yeah.
That's why, like, I played with quarterbacks that threw 75, 80 passes, or could throw the ball 80 times in a practice, and they had a little clicker, Tom Brady, clicker. I had other guys that could throw 300 or 500 times in a practice. Yeah. I played with offensive linemen who could train 6 days a week. I played with an offensive lineman who, when we came to college, had squatted 600 and benched 400 as a high school.
That's very, very, very impressive.
Training 2 days a week. All of a sudden, we come to college, and we have to train 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Every single day he was in college, he barely benched 250 by the time he was a senior. And his comment was, it's too much. I'm so tired all the time. He was a little monkey. Pro football, and especially offensive line deal, we naturally select for big monkeys. I mean, and I'm sure there were guys that I played with that were much more talented, but just couldn't survive the load. So, I mean, that was kind of a good explanation he gave for me, because they had various track athletes that worked in Russia that, like, they'd write these programs, and the guys would do a quarter of it. And they were world champions.
Define load for me. Some people might say,
well, load. Like
I want to bench 500, yeah, which, like, is totally minimum.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like there's certain people that can train with much more volume and
yes.
frequency, tend to recover faster, and just handle things much better.
Those are the people that move forward.
Yeah, but I mean, pro football selects for these, especially offensive line, D-line, you have to be a big monkey. But I think for things like quarterbacks and some running backs, there's other guys that they can really kind of curtail the load. And there's guys that just can't run the rock every time, but when they do, it's amazing. So that was his big monkey, small monkey. And then the other one was, he said that the Politburo wanted to try to figure out what, like, the perfect program was. So okay. They had every single coach submit all of the programs from everybody that had won, like, a world championship and a gold medal. And then they had this, like, big group of, like, sports scientists that were going to sit down, crunch all the numbers, and try to find, like, the common threads.
Okay.
And then they were going to, like, spit it out for, like, this perfect program. This is everybody should train. And so after, like, 5 years of this, finally, they, like, booked a conference, and the, you know, the powers that be, like, put guns to these guys' heads and said, you have to present. So the guy gets up there, and he's like, after 5 years and, you know, hundreds of thousands of these programs and all this stuff, he said the place is packed. The guy gets up, and he's like, we only concluded two things. The strongest guys in the world lifted the heaviest weights in training. The fastest guys ran the fastest in training. And that was it. And he told me this, and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And I was driving home the next day after the meeting, and I, like, was replaying it in my head, and I'm like, the strongest guys lift the heaviest weights and the fastest run the fastest? Like, at the end of the day, like, okay, like, if you want to be strong, you'll lift heavy weights. And I listened to people periodize and talk about this and this, and I'm like, you know, old man Zangus, right? If you want to get good at lifting heavy weights, you got to lift heavy weights. If the lightweights made us strong, why the fuck wouldn't we lift those? It's way less work. Right? Charlie Francis. I never saw anybody get fast by running slow. To run fast, you got to be fast and run fast all the time. And so
and he was always saying, you don't have to do 50 times volumes.
Yeah.
You know, just run fast. As soon as that drops over, he said, you drop below 85%,
yeah.
Stop.
It's a no man's land.
Don't do that anymore.
So Charlie, it was hilarious. I told you, he was on speakerphone and he would stop and he'd go like, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then as he was talking, he would cough. And I'm like, for like 20 minutes, I'm like, what is that? Is that like a breathing app? And then I realized he was smoking.
Yes.
He was a huge smoker. He was taking these monster drags. Like, and he smoked a chip like a chimney. Mm-hmm. Very interesting cat. But so those were some of the, you know, like, but I had this amazing opportunity. And actually, it's how I met Chris. And he was an attendee at a seminar and came to work for us. And it was really interesting because I got a chance to work this stuff out in real time. We had a website we were putting out free workouts, and people were giving me all the information that I needed in terms of like the results.
Okay.
So I was seeing this stuff in real time, and I had literally 50 new people every weekend to test. And we were teaching anywhere, like 1 year we did 36, we were doing 25, we were doing, you know, 30. I mean, it was hundreds of seminars we were doing with tens of thousands of athletes. And awesome. It was from the Arctic Circle to New Zealand.
When you guys were doing this, were you seeing different ages, children versus adults?
No, it was mostly adults. Okay. You know, we were seeing people probably 18 to 60, 58 years old, older people showed up. But then we had people taking the program and then implementing it with kids. And all of a sudden I get an email like, hey, so-and-so just got a scholarship. I mean, we had, what was it? Braden Smith benched.
Yeah, he's on Colts right now.
Yeah, our coach, one of our coaches came, and the kid was a freshman, put him on our program. He sent me like a video 3 years later, and the kid was benching 535. And I was like, holy shit, what'd you do? He's like, exactly what you told me on the program. And I was like, oh my God, the kid was a...
So also, the perspective we introduced that was not common was the life cycle of an athlete.
Yeah.
So not giving high schoolers, beginners, a professional's program, yeah. So it wasn't what John did. Okay, this is guiding linear progression of what John would do if he was a high schooler.
Yeah.
We need to remember that the people that write the books are the people that won the gold medal or are taking drugs.
Well, but
and those are genetic freaks already.
So how can you? How is it like? This is what blew my mind. People hit me up and like, hey, what did you do for your training? And I would tell them what I did for my training. They're like, should I do that? I'm like, no, because you're not me. You have to follow the progression. This is the program I did initially to get strong. These are the mistakes I made, and then this is the program I did in the intermediate, and this was the advanced program. And so we started training people with progression where, like, you know, if you've never lifted weights, basically linear progression where we can trick the nervous system into adding weight to the bar works really well. You get to a certain point, and then we got to diverge whether we increase, you know, cross-sectional size of a muscle, bad hypertrophy, or increase central nervous system efficiency, or do a bit of both with a, you know, concurrent training model. And then there's, like, an advanced program in this, and at that point it gets way more specific, and you're probably not going to be able to get that off the fucking internet for $20. Right? You have to actually go work with a master coach who assesses you, figure out what's wrong, and then writes you a specific program that allows you to have an extent or, you know, uses, you know, what's said, specific adaptation to impose demands. I mean, so like this is where I think we were trying to breed some sanity into people and being like, you're not going to magically find some program that's going to make you a world-class athlete on the internet and just magically do it in your basement. It's going to work. It just doesn't work like that. I wish it did. And so I think we tried to really offer people a little bit of sanity and really just kind of focus on movement quality.
Now, when you are, for the listeners, the specificity is the most important, you know, if you're going to be swimming a fast race, you got to swim fast every day. If you're going to run a fast race, you got to train fast every day. Now, I want to ask you a question, Jen. When you're looking at all these people that you guys are training, do you guys got a background history of what they were doing? Do you get a background history of all injuries you guys go through a history? Or you just guys...
No, we just literally said, you know, all right. So we had to come up with a bunch of assessments.
Okay.
And the first one we started with was just a basic dead bug. So isostability test. Dr. Glasser, who was a spine surgeon down in Tampa, used to use a basic dead bug isostability with the arms straight up and the legs straight. And then he would show, like, okay, proficiency from dead bug home. And then your ability to maintain stability in the trunk would come with moving the limbs independently in different patterns. From there, we could judge hamstring flexibility. We could look at dorsiflexion, ankle flexibility, assess whether or not people could understand how to arrange their trunks, what was going on the shoulders. And we could pretty much, from the dead bug, tell you exactly how everything else was going to look. And then we just basically started being like, we got to watch this guy. And we would pair people up based on whether or not they could effectively move their limbs independently and while they were stabilizing their trunk. And it wasn't 100%, so we had other movements. But that's where we started. So we basically created what we called warm-ups that were literally just assessments for the coaches to fucking figure out who people were and who you had to look out for. And we ended up putting these together really quickly to where we could assess people within minutes. Like, I didn't have to, like, figure out that you... I didn't have to ask you to know that your shoulder was impinged. I didn't have to, you know, ask you that your hamstrings were extremely tight and you had no ability to maintain trunk stability as you move your limbs. And it got to the point where we were, like, making bets, like, this guy can't do it. And then we put him under a load and he couldn't do it. And what was amazing was then all of a sudden we would help people, assess them, teach them, and then send them out in the world. And then they would come back to us. And all of a sudden, 6 months later, they'd fixed all their problems.
Oh, wow. That is very, very impressive. Now, when you guys came through these warm-up and assessments, You say you used a dead bug.
Yeah,
okay.
It was basically dead bug. No, I never liked the dead bug with the knee span. It was always leg straight.
Okay. Any other things that you look up for that person? Do you say, hey, you have this weakness on the dead bug, we need to do this warm up first, and then we go into weightlifting, or how do you guys do it?
These warm ups were the broken down of the barbell movements. So the barbell back squat. So then we would break into four movement patterns, dead bug being one. So isolate the spine. And then we had another one, a Spider-Man, where I would step. I can show you.
Let's do it. I don't know what the Spider-Man is.
Yeah. So,
a push up, but then if I step this up, now we can see how low they're going to squat.
Yeah, because most people did end up driving the knee out this way. So what we were really teaching was toes forward,
okay.
Knee tracks over the insteps, because that's the most efficient position we found for what I call the universal athletic position.
Or Ronnie.
Right? Yeah, like it's basically called the universal athletic position because everybody uses it for everything.
Yes. You know?
And then, which is just the UAP.
So your dead bug also, do the dead bug, with the leg straight, you said.
Yeah, so what we found, this basic isostability test, is that he needs to draw his belly button in, basically paint the ground with his low back. From here, what we can do is we can assess not only dorsiflexion, but we can also look at hamstring flexibility. And then as he starts moving, we can try to figure out, as he's holding different positions, can he maintain trunk, what he can do with his shoulders, what's going on with the hamstrings, and more importantly, if now all of a sudden, if he starts externally rotating, you know, not being able to move this, and so all the different workarounds. But that basic dead bug position was extremely telling. Then we had four other movements we worked in.
Well, I like just, that because it's simplicity.
Yeah.
I like that.
But it was really hard triage. Like we were walking in, imagine you walk into a room with 50 people that are doing a training system that you know is broken. And you have to basically teach them, because CrossFit teaches the squat very, I think, really poorly. They were teaching people to like turn their toes out and drive their knees out, which if you think about changing direction, the reason we squat is so that we can effectively make people reduce force from a jump or a change of direction.
I've never seen a fast power lifter.
No. Yeah, that's true, right?
No.
I use the squat as a way to challenge posture position for landing on a jump and then also for change of direction. And I know for change of direction that if my foot's in the ground this way, opposed from what I call the RG3, where all of a sudden the toe turns out, the knee goes out because you can't maintain stability. And so we were just using it for that. Like I like the back squat because I can make people better at the universal athletic position, not necessarily make them stronger in a back squat. So like how we were doing with toes forward, knees tracking over the insteps, a lot of people couldn't hit parallel. And they were like, well, you know, I shouldn't do this, I can't hit parallel. I'm like, well, yeah, I don't need you to squat perfect today, but I need you to squat better. And then 6 months from now, it's a progression. Everybody wants everything today. And
it's cool because we could use the movements to then show them. So it wasn't just, hey, you need to squat this way. And then we would break down, okay, this is where you're getting short. Okay, here's our expectation.
Yeah.
Here's a Spider-Man. You're going to step your foot up and your hip crease is above your knee right now. So you're showing yourself you can't get below parallel right now. Over time, the dead bug, the Spider-Man, is your movement solution,
your assessment,
your corrective exercise, if you will.
Chris, it was dead bug, Spider-Man, seesaw walk. Was the other
I don't one. Know what seesaw walk is.
So now we lock in the trunk. I can go arms up, overhead, or to the side. So now I have athletic bend in this leg. My opposite leg is in dead bug. But now we're training a posterior chain dominance because CrossFit was so knees out, quad dominant.
Okay.
So we're training the hamstring to load
and then also unilateral pull through.
Pull myself back up. So posterior chain loading.
Okay.
What we saw with the CrossFitters, they can't balance here. They just valgus knee, so some ligament dominance, quad dominance, and then externally rotating. So we're aiming just to teach that hamstring to pull up. And then the last one was just the athletic position burpee.
So which is, if you look at his position, chest is over the knees, toes are straight ahead, knees track over the insteps, the butt is back, and he's loading the glutes, which if you think about is baseball, football, everything. That's why it's called the UAP, the universal athletic position.
And so we would have 40 people going through a burpee minus a push-up. So
just a sprawl.
Sprawl. I don't want to hit the big guy here. So just sprawl and then replace. Whoops. And then jumping from here, we watched how people jumped. So our expectation, just like a squat, I just want power from this position versus loading.
And then also landing with the knees shoved forward of the bird, which was which we used to see all the time.
Yeah, how do they land? We see big valgus. We see like that.
Yeah. So just teaching people to how lifting weights translates to being able to move through.
How many of you guys never spoke to Paul Check?
I do know Paul Check, but I don't. I never spoke to him.
Interesting. You guys have a lot of beliefs that are very similar.
Yeah.
So and it's very interesting. You guys used to use the dead bug too. Paul is an amazing person too. I mean, he taught me a lot.
I think they did. They used to do the dead bug with the knees bent.
Yes, he did.
I never liked the variation because it didn't allow me to test hamstring flexibility.
Well, you didn't, yeah.
So I got that movement from Dr. Through Rafael Ruiz and Dr. Glasser. So Dr. Glasser was one when I trained with a guy named Rafael Ruiz down in Tampa. Raf would go and work, and we'd go over, and Dr. Glasser was a spine surgeon, and we went over there and observed like a bunch of stuff with these people, these spinal injuries, and he was using this version of dead bug as like a test for whether or not people were like ready to get back to play from their spine surgery. So we just, he's like, it's a basic isostability test if they can maintain stability. And so we stole that from him, and we did the dead bugs pretty religiously. And then I remember when we started teaching the seminar, I remember Raf, I was like, fuck dude, like these people are awful. He's like, well, we just dead bug them. And so we started using the dead bugs, and then we just basically started developing these assessments because we didn't know these people. Like 50 people walk in at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning at a gym, and you're like, okay, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about like what we're doing here. Let's start moving. And we had to get these people on a ready and teach them to lift weights. But they had so much dysfunction that we had to basically do some like quick detective work to figure out who was fucked up and who wasn't.
Did you guys get people with injuries that come to see you? I need to rehab. Do you guys get those cases or not?
All the time. I had a guy who was an EOD guy in the Navy. He tore his pec off the bone, pec major ripped off.
Okay.
He got into a position where he was trying to recruit on pull-ups by moving his arm in this way. And he effectively got to the point where he could no longer do a pull-up. I mean, that's one of the guys I've been working with. And basically got to the point where he just couldn't physically do it. And actually, we ended up taking him to Dr. Bueller. And Dr. Bueller worked on him, and the next day he went and did pull-ups. None of his lats, nothing in his lat, nothing in his trap, and nothing in his back was firing. He couldn't get anything. Dr. Bueller got him balancing, went and did pull-ups.
Wow.
So, I mean, so Dr. Bueller's contention is if you get adjusted or somebody works, like if you do body work on people and it doesn't hold, it's something bigger. And then you got to start looking at like other systems of the body, whether it be organs or whatnot. But if somebody's healthy and there's dysfunction, because people get injured, you just rebalance them and they're fine to get back out in the world.
I got to meet this guy because I'm aware of what you're saying, because I use actually Dr. Silly here is very good at that also. So that's very impressive that
Craig, and I'm not saying this because I've known him, but I honestly he is as I think you guys would. I'm surprised you guys don't know each other. But he's as like as close to I've ever seen as anybody into like voodoo, you know, things.
I gotta meet this guy now, because now you're telling me what you're doing, which is actually true. In my office, we see it all the time. We usually, for example, I'm gonna give you an example. Yesterday, I saw a football coach. He's a 22-year-old guy. He's a teacher, special ed, but he coaches football and basketball at the high school. And he had MRIs, had X-rays, orthopath, physical therapy. And he's telling me, my neck hurts all the time, severe pain. And the kid keeps moving. I examine his neck. I even give it a couple of blocks to see if that affects him. You know, I still have my neck pain. And I'm walking around, and he had a scar from here to here on his index finger. And I'm like, wait a second, when do you do this? He said, well, he has been having neck pain for 4 months. He said, about 4 or 5 months ago, I cut my finger, and they put stitches on it. And he had railroad tracks. I said, really? And he said, move your neck, do this. So I pinched the scar, and I said, move your neck now. He said, well, it's a little better. So I injected.
Oh, you completely did the scar therapy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it completely went away. He couldn't believe it.
I bet none of my neck.
So it was like, you know, here's one time we do not consider the fascia system as important as the muscle or even the nerve, but by me injecting that finger, the pain totally went away. He couldn't believe it.
Yeah, Dr. Bueller, when I went in there, part of my issue was my atlas was so far out that I effectively, like, I think I was going through life like on 50%. So when he assessed me, and this is years ago, I literally hobbled in, and he laid me down and was like, hey, and he basically did what he called the toggle, the atlas.
Okay.
And it was just, if the lights went on, 30% brighter. And then he did another thing, which is called a cranial manipulation, where they put a balloon in your nose.
Okay.
And they inflate the balloon, and it basically cracks the sutures in your skull. he basically did that cranial manipulation, and the crunch was like somebody released the pain and the pressure in my head to the point where, like, I didn't even know that I had this pressure until it was gone. And at that point, like, between the atlas and the cranial manipulation, I was like, holy shit, like, this is unbelievable. And 3 days later, I walked out of there, and I had no doubt I could go play in the NFL again. It was that life-changing a deal
for me. Where is he located at?
Kaysville, Salt Lake City.
Okay.
So if you're ever in that area or you want to go meet him, I'll gladly meet with you or go and meet you. But he would...
I'm going to have to.
What he does is... It's really pretty interesting. I'd love for you to go through it and see your understanding. But his whole deal is that, like, muscles shut down through dysfunction. And there's a neurological... basically break in the system, and then he goes through and he's able to stimulate points and basically get it to reset, and then he'll basically do a test and retest. Like, he'll put me in a position and I don't have any power, he'll do it, and all of a sudden it'll lock in to the point where I'm like, and to the point where I can feel it. And I've been seeing him for so long that I can, as I start lifting weights and start training, I know when things start breaking down. And it's a pretty interesting deal. But yeah, Tom's known him for years, and actually Roman out. So it's interesting that, like, we know a lot of the same people, but you don't know Craig Buehler. So I'd like to, it'd be a good one for you to meet.
Absolutely, because we're talking about people, and I'm like, wait a second, I never saw the relationship between them and him now that you're saying that. And I had a case that now that you think, I think about it, he treated him, because he said, I saw somebody inside, like, sitting in my office, and he had some issue with the elbow, and he fixed it. Mm-hmm. Which was pretty impressive. But I never correlated with that name. Now I do.
Yeah.
I don't know, Dylan, do you know this guy? Have you heard of him? Which is interesting. What's the name of his technique?
AMIT. Activated Muscle Integration Technique.
Okay.
And he has some practitioners, but the issue comes down to, and this is something that, you know, years ago, people were coming in and doing a week-long seminar, but the work is so intuitive. That now, and I remember telling Doc, this is years ago, he hit me up and said, hey, can you come up? I'm having a big clinic and I'd like for to come work on you, and I'd like these people kind of see this. So I was like, no problem. I had been having some it was against the Rams. I was playing right guard. I was playing right guard. And we called the same play, a short trap, 3 times in a row. Defensive linemen are stupid, but, like, not on the third time. And this dude basically took a step and ran to hit me, and I herniated a disc in my neck. I felt it. Like, I couldn't move my head. It was locked up. And we had an old-time osteopath on our team that used to work on horses. And he, like, adjusted this thing and popped it back in. So periodically, I'll feel, like, the twinge of it. And one time, it locked up so bad that I thought I was having a heart attack. My wife took me to the hospital. He's having a heart attack, and it was such bad pain. Finally, they gave me, like, a painkiller or a muscle relaxer went away. So I went up and saw Doc, but I was seeing, and he worked on me for, like, 20 minutes with these people, and everything was fine. But I had all this terrible nerve pain going down, and they ended up doing something that they called a nervous system reset.
Okay.
Where they, I forgot what they injected into me, but it was basically like turned like everything up to like 11, and then it kind of calmed down, and also the residual pain went away.
Okay.
So, I mean, these guys have done some pretty interesting stuff, but there hasn't been anything that Dr. Buehler, like, he's worked with, like Peekaboo Street. I mean, so when, who's the Odell Beckham Jr. tore his ACL.
Okay.
They brought Dr. Buehler in, and he was the guy that worked on him every week to get him to be able to play in the Super Bowl. And so Buehler's been working with him.
Wow.
So he's a pretty interesting dude. But long story short, so we were teaching these seminars for years, and then I realized that we were building a ton of brand loyalty into a brand that we did not own with CrossFit. So I started Power Athlete, and then that's where this deal started.
And that's what started hating you.
Yeah, and then the minute that we did, all of a sudden we got in this really tumultuous relationship with CrossFit that just turned really toxic, because we were going in one direction, which was like, human performance, perfection, excellence in movements, and being able to, like, make people more, specific. I wasn't really interested in making people more fit. Like, you can make anybody fit by just making them do more than they did yesterday. And I was into more, like, developing athletes and trying to give them better opportunity. And then CrossFit, we just got really kind of just negative, and we ended up parting ways with them.
I agree with you. I don't like CrossFit at all. I tell my patients, I just see you more often.
I like the community. I like the
community. Because the community are hard ass, people want to do their work.
And they want to work. They want to lift weights. They're like, they're the type of people that have a garage gym. Like, they want to be better. I just think that, like, the person that they picked is their pariah. And more importantly, like, their methodology.
The key about CrossFit, to be honest, it's not boring.
Yeah.
Because always something different that whatever I don't know what they call it, you know, the programs that today you run 3 miles and then you do Olympic lifting, whatever, and they have their names for the programs.
Yeah.
And I explain to my patients, there's no boredom because you are going there. Somebody's writing a program that they're going to pick out of their pocket today. They don't know what you did last night. You stay up, do you sleep well, what do you do yesterday? And they just write the program, hey, go do this program. Yeah.
Well,
which is crazy.
It's predicated off of, do you remember muscle confusion?
Yes.
Do you remember in the 80s and the 90s?
Joe Weider, muscle confusion.
Tony Martin?
Yes.
Yeah, do you remember muscle confusion?
Yes, yes, yes.
Why the fuck do I got to confuse my muscles? But he convinced everybody that the only way you got better was by confusing your body and your muscles.
Yes.
So I think with CrossFit, with this constantly varied, they were effectively trying to avoid what they thought was a law of accommodation. But like, you know, Louis and them talked about, you know, if you train over 90% in a certain movement, yes, you get accommodation just to switch the movement. So I think it was like a bad translation of what Louis was talking about, the law of accommodation. But so a part of the problem was, you know, Greg was probably one of the most intelligent people I've ever met and a very charismatic speaker, but he kind of eschewed and just pushed off anything that looked like strength conditioning or you know, that. And so I think he saw certain things that he liked, but he didn't necessarily like invest in understanding the shortcomings. So yes, he saw it and was like, well, let's just do constantly varied. It's like muscle confusion. We'll avoid the law of accommodation, not realizing. Like, I think a lot of things that he pulled in, he just like saw from a distance and just made his own assertions on things and kind of formulated it. Because I talked to him. I sat down, I'm like, where did this come from? Why'd you do this, this, and this? And so I got all the backstory on everything. And I realized that he didn't know fuck all about strength conditioning. Didn't understand. All he knew was when people worked really hard, they got in better shape. And as long as they came consistently, they got better.
They got fitter. And, I don't know. Yeah, don't use the word better shape.
Well, better shape. They looked better. But yes. But he was also using a fucking very caloric restricted form of the zone.
Fitter.
Yeah.
Let's use the word fitter.
So if you pull a bunch of calories out and have people do nothing but high intensity exercise, they're going to get in better shape. They're going to look better.
Better, yes.
But their clothes are going to be looser. And so that was what he did. And then they also realized a little bit of Stockholm syndrome. That if you put people through these god-awful workouts, all of a sudden, the more that you burn them and the harder you make it, you end up kind of creating a bit of resiliency.
Yes,
in a lot of
people want to come back and say, I did it.
Yeah, but like, you know, there's a reason that people fall in love with their captors. And we saw this all the time where all of a sudden people, like, the harder you made it, the more people came back and they wouldn't fucking leave. So the worst thing, though, like, and they even said, if you want to have a CrossFit gym that has all their members leave, just make it easy.
I never thought about that. That's a true thing.
100%. Maybe not today, but Stockholm Syndrome was a big part of this thing.
Man, how long did you stay there?
We were there 9 years. We worked at CrossFit for 9 years. And the relationship was terrible. But unfortunately,
When did he start Rogue then?
Bill Henniger and Katie Henniger started Rogue. Obviously it was very small.
Yes.
And basically they grew the company on the back of CrossFit, and then now they're fucking way bigger than CrossFit. But Greg never owned it. He could have owned half of it.
So, oh, I saw that Greg was part owner of it.
So he could have, that's a crazy thing. He should have owned everything. He could have owned me, he could have owned everybody, but I don't think he ever had the ability to do that.
Okay.
He always gave this free market bullshit, but I think it was just, I even said to him, I'm like, dude, look at what Mark Zuckerberg does. If somebody grows a technology inside of his ecosystem and it becomes good, he purchases it. Look at what he did at Instagram. Why wouldn't you have let, as Rogue came up, been like, give me half? And they would have given him half, but he didn't. When we had our food company with Rob Wolf, we would have given him half if he had asked. He could have owned everything. And he just, either it was arrogance or incompetence that was covered up his bravado.
Well, I'm looking forward to see what you guys. What's your website, by the way?
PowerAthleteHQ.com.
Okay.
And so, we had a very unique ability in that I had the opportunity to work this stuff out in real time. So, I mean, in terms of like whether it be programming, movement, everything, I had 50 people every weekend showing up, and we were training literally thousands of people and traveling the world and doing it. And it was amazing. The people that were doing the training were dramatically better than the people that weren't. Shocker. But we also had the ability to test all this stuff because we were giving away free workouts through Power or CrossFitFootball.com.
Okay.
And then what was wild was I got approached by Compax, the EMS devices.
Okay.
So they reached out to me and they were like, hey, do you know these EMS devices? And I was like, yeah, I used them with Charlie Francis. That's how I fixed my knee. They were signed as recovery devices. And I was like, no, these are performance devices. All these hurts. these activate different motor units and different thresholds in this. This is like, you know, slow twitch, fast twitch, and this. And I'm like, we can use all these and recruit motor units to make athletes better. You know, because how many motor units are recruited during a workout? I don't fucking know, but I know I get 100% here. So they asked me, they were like, hey, is there any way for you to like run a training test to see if you can increase performance? And I was like, yeah, but we're going to have to get people to buy them. And they're like $800. And we're going to have to find a way to collect the data, and people aren't going to organically give it to me. So we set up a paywall, and I started selling a program for like $20. It was called FieldStrong. And part of the deal was that you had to have a Compex. You had to buy it,
okay,
and you had to log in, follow the workout, and give me your results. So not only did I get the results I wanted, I was able to test the product.
How much money were they spending on this?
So people were spending $20 to join the program. So not only were they, I found that people don't value free shit. So by them paying $20, which I just wanted to know, was how I found out. I was like, well, if I force them to pay, they'll give me the workouts, or they'll give me the
results.
Yeah. And we ran like an 800 person. There was like 800 people in it that were following the training program, and I want to say like 300 of them were using the Compex devices.
Do they pay for that device?
Yeah, they bought them themselves.
Shit, how much was the device?
Like between like $600 and $800. Yeah, people were crushing it. And we found, and we were basically running two groups, the people that had it, the people that didn't. I found that like for young athletes, we were using them post. For older athletes, we were using them pre to try to like, you know, activate motor units. And it was amazing. Like vertical jumps went up, people's strength. I mean, it was pretty remarkable, to the point where like we tested the efficacy and it went through the roof. And so then the problem we ran into was I was like, they started trying to market it as a performance device, but people didn't want it as a performance device. They wanted it as a recovery device. So they couldn't sell it as a performance device. They wanted recovery. So I got frustrated. And then Eric Ladder, he ended up finding another company that was called PowerDot.
Okay.
We ended up going over and working with PowerDot because they ended up creating a wireless system because I wanted people to be able to do plyometrics with it. You know, you think about what it's really doing is it's, making concentric movements, okay, right? And then you're basically forcing eccentrics.
It's a DC current.
Yeah, correct. So it's straightening the muscle.
Okay.
And now I'm dynamically shortening the muscle. So it was really pretty fun where all of a sudden we had people doing basically, you know, some really interesting dynamic type movement with it. And we were seeing some amazing results, but they just never could sell it as a performance device. So, I mean, that, and then, but what happened was we ended up creating this paywall. And we had people, like 800 people in this program. And it got to the point where, like, it was just behind this WordPress paywall. The amount of, like, billing issues and fucking bullshit we were dealing with was basically crippling our company because it was, like, canceled credit cards and this. So it was, like, 40 hours a week of just billing. And I was like, this is going to fucking cripple us. And then Train Heroic approached us and said, hey, we're starting. Like, we'll basically handle all your back-end stuff if you come on as a power user and help us develop our tech. And so we came on as their power user and grown that obviously into thousands of people. So I didn't really expect to get into the online programming business. We just wanted to test these units, and then it basically went over, and now we have a big programming thing in training.
So most of your clients are right now through the internet, correct?
Yeah. But what we do is through the education stuff, they follow an online methodology, which Krista did a great job with. But then once they execute that, they actually have to physically come and fucking challenge and earn their block.
So let me understand this. The educational program, you guys teach, I would say, clusters of educational whatever programs. Then when you do that, then you need to go do a practical.
Yeah.
And you guys, where do you guys do that?
Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, they have to show up. And it's, you know, what we really struggled with was when we were doing the CrossFit football seminars, people showed up, and I was amazed at how little strength and conditioning knowledge people had. Just basic physiology, like distal, eccentric, concentric, isometric. Didn't understand the idea that you needed to train isometric contractions to develop stability.
Some did.
So some did, yeah.
You're teaching to people that have degrees in strength and conditioning or performance or doctors, and then people that just showed up and signed up.
Yeah. Okay. And so it was just basic. I mean, and old man Zangus, when I was 14 years old, I remember we were lifting weights and we started talking about compensatory acceleration. And he had talked about his good friend, Fred Hatfield.
Okay.
And compensatory acceleration, and like that was a huge thing for me. You know, the idea is mechanical advantage increase, so to speak. And then I took it from the weight room and realized that, like, instead of hitting somebody here, if I try to aim 4 inches through them, now I'm punching my hands through people. When I go hit somebody, I'm not just trying to hit them, I'm trying to drive my head through them. And so I basically took compensatory acceleration from the weight room and applied it to my football. And then that's when I started crippling people and just fucking people up. And to the point where, like, people, like, you know, the scouting report comes out, like, don't let this dude hit you, he's going to fucking kill you. And so the fast hands and all the boxing stuff I did when I was young, but that compensatory acceleration was, like, the foundation for what allowed me to go, I believe, was most probably most important method for me to go play football. And, like, talking about these things with individuals where I'm like, yeah, like, don't lift weights like old people, have sex, slow and careful, which is what Zangus used to say. And when we would show up and we watch people lift weights, I'm like, why do you guys lift weights like this? Like, you guys don't, like, you guys all stop at the bottom. It's it. Like, it just was really interesting because I had been kind of stuck in this bubble of professional sports with really, you know, world's best athletes. And now all of a sudden I'm teaching normal people that just show up. And it was like, holy shit, like, this is a real fucking problem. These people don't know how to move from point A to point B. How the fuck are they living their lives? And so by being able to give them a little bit of the slice, I think we really did a really big service at a time when people needed it, because I think they were drowning for information.
If I would have known what I know now, and I went and worked out with Louis and Westside and all that stuff, and then at that time my weights were not going up because my volume, I was on call every night or every other night. I was going to work, I was doing too much, I was never recovering. I will tell people that absolutely movement is the most important than anything else.
I talk too much. Give me like some history, like on, like, you know, who you are. I mean, obviously, you
actually,
know, you're probably not a native of Columbus. I'm going
to
take it.
No, I'm not. Actually, I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I went to Kansas State. Then there I was doing my master's in exercise physiology. I didn't finish it because I went to medical school. I went to medical school and then I ended up here in Columbus, Ohio. When I was here.
Are you an MD?
Yes, I'm an MD. I was lifting, but then I met one of Louis' guys and I wanted to lift weights. I went to Louis' gym and said, I want to go meet this guy. And
what
funny
year was this?
1991. Okay. And then I remember when I met Louis, he looked at me, he put his finger on my belly, he said, this is soft, I'm weak. And I haven't even met the guy, right? Just, oh my God. So he says, he lays down on the floor and puts a 45-pound bubble over his testicles, right? And he gave me a 20-pound medicine ball. He said, hit me on my belly with a medicine ball. Me standing up. I'm not making this up. And I'm thinking, dude, I can kill you with this ball, right? So I just dropped the ball onto his belly. He said, no. Hard. Throw it hard. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. I grab it back again. And I just went like this, right, over him. I'm standing over him, like just like that. And he says, no, hard. So I said, man, this guy, I don't know you. You know, I said, okay, I'm going to go from my head. I threw it semi-hard, you know. He got off. He took the weight off, and he got on my face hard and pushed me. And I said, well, fuck, I'm going to throw it hard then, get down there. I mean, I didn't jump or anything, but I took the ball from the top of my head, and I threw it on his freaking belly. I hit a freaking block.
Yeah.
I mean, the ball didn't even, you bong hit him, yeah, roll over. And he said, that's how you want your belly. When your belly's that hard, you come back. Mm. And I'm thinking, what the hell? So you see me, I went back, I'm doing isometrics, yeah, you know, sit-ups and all that bullshit. I go back, soft, go back. And now I'm pissed off, right? I said, you tell me what to do. So he said, you go do this, wait, you know. And he gave me some, and I went back and it was harder. And I remember, like, within, you know, I started going, I was the doctor, so I started seeing the patient, the guys there and stuff like that. And then I remember I had, by this time I weighed 180, 181, and I have 405 that I've been doing 8-9 reps easy. And that day I couldn't do it. I couldn't do one repetition. And he was sitting on the office and he saw me, and I tried it twice and the guys were making fun of me and racked it. And when I racked the last one, he said, put it back on your back. And I said, Louis, I can't do this. Put it back on your back. You never say no to Louis there.
Yeah, I know.
So I put it back on my back, and it's a squat. And I try. Man, John, he took his fist. He hit me so hard on my belly. I mean, he punched me. My instinct was, I want to drop the weights and beat the shit out of this guy. He said, squat. I couldn't do one. I couldn't do 1.5 reps. I did 7 reps after he punched me. I'm thinking, you know, I racked the damn thing. And I said, what does this old guy knows? He just punched me and I was able, you know, I'm sure the central nervous system, old Jack, yeah. I'm angry. But he said, no, your belly was hard when I punched you. Once I punched you, you didn't have the structure to be able to squat. Which eventually he told me, you need to take steroids.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the volume that I was doing. And I said, I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to take steroids. If I have kids, I want to tell my kids that I can do things without drugs. And that's when I said, I'm going to go try, you know, I'm smarter than most people here. I'm going to take what you taught me and I'm going to take it back. Mm-hmm. And then I had a good friend then named Mark Filippi. I don't know if you know who that is.
Okay.
And Ed Cohen. And they were friends of mine. And I call Ed, and I call Mark, and they start laughing at me. You're not taking steroids, dude. You're not going nowhere. You know, you cannot do what they do. So they said, you're not going to train like they do. You're not going to train 5 days a week. You can. I couldn't. I couldn't do it. I was never recovered. I told him my weights initially were going down. And I took what he taught me, and I said, okay, I'm going to change it. And I started working 3 times a week, and my weights started going up, up. Of course, Ed told me that, you know, don't do that many sets. Mark actually wrote Mark Filippi, that is still one of the best strength coaches I've seen that uses rotation a lot, actually, said, just do this.
He sells in Vegas?
I saw in Las Vegas. Actually, Mark is one of my best friends now.
Yeah, he's in Vegas.
Though. Yeah, he's in Las Vegas. He used to own a big gym now.
Yeah.
He sold it, and then he opened a small gym right now, and he's training a lot of fighters. Hmm. That's what he's doing right now. His son just got a scholarship, I think, to Iowa or someplace, big school for football.
Nice.
And you know, he's still training people there. Ed, you know, had bilateral hip surgery. You know, this, he, every time you see me, he squats in front of me, tells me how flexible he is, right?
Well, he, it's funny, did he have both hips replaced?
Both.
Yeah, he, it's interesting. I just had a guy come in for a former Navy SEAL, NSW, Death Crew, Delta guy. Ended up going on back to Delta, and he came in, and he's got a had a partial hip replacement. So we came in, and we're basically just trying to like get him back moving. And he was kind of beat up a little bit, and he had gone down to what was the stem cell place in Columbia?
Oh, that's it. I know what you're talking about.
Bio cell something. I forgot. So he went down there and they did a big stem cell thing on him. And I know Ed Cohen had gone down there, and I tried to tell these guys, I was like, you will be underwhelmed by the stem cells. And I was like, I haven't figured it out. And I think it's because they wash the stem cells and they move out the exosomes. It's the RNA within the exosomes that allows the stem cells to communicate.
This is going to sound racist because I used to do raw stem cells. Now I have my partner, the one that does them now. When you inject stem cells, the building materials, the exosomes are the Hispanics that come and put the building materials together. Yeah.
Well, that's it's the truth. The exosomes are how
it
they
is
connect.
Sad to say, but that is, I mean, they it's a huge difference.
They were washing them and they were just doing the stem cells. And I tried to tell these guys, I'm like, you're going to be underwhelmed. You need the exosomes, and they weren't using the exosomes. And Tom, it was a couple of years ago. Tom Inkledon hit me up and he's like, hey, we got these really high end exosomes. He's like, you got to come try these things. It's like, I think he was up to like, you know, 6 trillion or something. Mm-hmm. And so Tom, I went in, and he ended up doing some putting the exosomes in my knee and my shoulder, and then he ran in the IV. And it was, when I tell you, like, there's certain things that I'll view as, like, what I call life-changing. I think the hyperbarics was really interesting. The exosomes, it was the weirdest thing.
Hyperbarics increases exosomes.
Well, so they hit me with the exosomes, and all of a sudden, like, maybe 12 hours later, like this was the first thing in the morning, we went to dinner, and I was sitting there, and I felt like this kind of low-level humming buzz, almost like I'd had a drink, but I hadn't had a drink. And I said to Tom, I was like, man, like, did you notice it kind of like a warm kind of buzzing feeling a little bit from the exosomes? And he's like, yeah, I think I did. And it didn't leave me for like 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And what was wild was it fixed, because, you know, I mean, obviously it was small enough to move across the blood-brain barrier, but I think what it did, it removed some inflammation in my skull and my brain. I really think that if you provide the right environment for the brain, you can fix it. And I think whatever the exosomes did, I'm not kidding you, like, it fixed. Like, so, I mean, so the part of my brain that I think got jammed up when I played football was right here on my left side. So when I retired from the NFL, Dr. Raymond, had a big study. I was in the study, and the part of my brain that didn't map, that they couldn't get to light up, was right over here on the left side. They said left frontal lobe deals with sympathy, empathy, and like kind of emotional type stuff. So they prescribed me Adderall. They felt Adderall stimulated, so when they basically gave me Adderall, it basically stimulated this part. So they said if I ever felt a little off, or I felt a little like whatever, just something wasn't right, they just want you to take like 5 milligrams of Adderall. So I took Adderall, like, you know, just kind of on and off a little bit. Like if I, like I woke up and something was a little off, or I wasn't feeling right, I would take it and fix it instantly. And so as soon as I took the exosomes, I realized that I've never taken the Adderall since, and I actually forgot about it. To the point where I looked in the medicine cabinet and I was like, holy shit, I haven't taken this. My wife's like, when was the last time you took that Adderall? I'm like, it's been years. And whatever that part, and I'm actually going next week at South by Southwest, the group that Nick Hardwick's working with is doing 3D brain scans. And so I'm going on Sunday to do it, and I'm fascinated to see if whatever I did fixed this.
Well, the exosomes work amazing. We provided in my office, we up to go 50, depends.
Do you know a guy named Philip Yu, Doc Yu? Mm-hmm. He's like he sits on the board for like the exosome, or for the Stem Cell Society, and he's like one of the experts.
Is he from Boston?
Southern California, Orange County.
No, don't know him.
Okay.
I know that the guy that was running most of the work for exosome was from Boston, from Massachusetts, and he was putting most of the patents and doing it through the FDA. I don't know this guy. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, his name's Philip Yu. He's in Doc Yu, and it was wild. Was Tom England on, and I were talking about it, and he's like, "Hey, man, like there's this guy in California who sits on the board. He's doing like a he has a ton of clout because he has a treatment facility out in Palm Springs, and he basically works on all the old golfers. So these old guys come into golf, and he just juices them up with all this, and these guys feel like $1 million. And he's like, this guy's like a badass. And he told me his name, and he used to train in our gym, and I built his garage gym. I'm like, Doc, you? I was like, what are you talking about, Doc, you? Like, he's one of my clients. Like, he was at my gym. I built his garage gym. And so Doc, you has been like another, you know, another small world type. Probably just didn't know if you knew him. But the exosomes, whatever it did. And then my part of our kind of move out of California, which was a, kind of an interesting one for many reasons, but my daughter ended up getting a little bit of vaccine injury.
Okay.
So she ended up developing PANS and PANDAS.
Which vaccine?
MMR.
Okay.
And so we ended up getting an exemption for the vaccines in California, but I have a twin. She has a twin that they wouldn't give the exemption to. So
I know you moved out of California.
Yes, we had to move out of California. There were other reasons, but that was a big reason for it, too. I took her to Tom. We did the exosomes. Gone. So they talk about the PANS and the PANDAS being brain inflammation. It knocked it right out. Like, she would, I could tell when she got, something happened, because it's like almost like, what do you call it? Like, almost like a pneumonia. Really just kind of an interesting deal. But when she got exposed to somebody that was sick, she'd get like kind of tics, and she would start climbing door frames.
PANDAS, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, what weird shit.
Which usually they think is a staph or strep infection.
Yeah, it was staph. So if she ever got exposed to like staph or strep or anything, so she would get all these tics. We took her, one set of the exosomes, all of a sudden, gone. And so that was a really interesting one too.
I haven't used them for that. I've used them for a lot for the joints. So I gotta think about what you're telling me today.
But the running the, I mean, the localized was fine, but running the IV, like, made me feel like that was, like, I think the mix of the exosomes. So when I first retired from the NFL, it was weird. Like, I was in a dark place, and I saw Dr. Buehler. It was really the first time where I felt like somebody, like, gave me, like, the keys back to my life. I felt like now all of a sudden, like, I'm on the path to fixing this shit. And then, you know, one of the other ones was just, you know, cognitively, like, something was off. I mean, which is, you know, should be the case. I mean, you can't beat your head into an individual and have this level of inflammation and not expect something to be wrong. And then I realized that, like, you know, is this permanent? And then I realized, like, all right, why is this permanent? I thought it had to do, and I talked to Brian about this, just observationally, the guys that I observed that took the most amount of painkillers were the dudes that tended to have the most problems. And I always wonder, it's because once they played, they couldn't get off the painkillers. And then it started.
Well, not only that, painkillers also, they stop your pain, but at a certain price. They will cause osteoporosis, they will cause bone loss, they will cause mind losses, People don't understand what they do. Which,
yeah, I mean, the, like the, what is it, like the netting or whatever in the brain, they eat holes in this and the gut and all this, so many ton of problems. But I thought, like, hey, man, like, maybe there's a way to fix this thing. And so I reached out to a friend who's an MIT researcher, mm-hmm. a guy named Matt Lalonde. And I asked Matt, I'm like, you know, like, is there anything out there that you've seen that fixes acute or, you know, chronic brain trauma? And his deal was a ketogenic diet.
So, That is, I use a lot of ketogenic diet, but nothing works as good as hyperbaric chambers.
So I started with the ketogenic. I did that. I didn't eat a carb for a year, which was fucking miserable. And like that was like another interesting one. And so then the other one is I think I'm the longest continuous creatine user on the planet. So I started taking creatine when I was 14. The old man Zangus gave it to us. And then I've been telling people all the time, I think it's a neuroprotectant. I think
it's a huge book by the guy named Jeff Stahl and Richard Craig. That they wrote about, and I'll send it to you actually, about creatine and how it is a neuroprotector and antidepressant, by the way.
Yeah. And the reason ATP for energy, I mean.
Well, the reason people don't understand is that the parent molecule for creatine is S-adenosine methionine. I don't know if you know what that means. In a methylation system, a pathway, you go from methionine to homocysteine, but in between, you create S-adenosine methionine, which the body doesn't give a crap if you're depressed or not. Only give a crap if you have enough energy to survive and go eat.
Yeah.
So S-adenosine methionine goes into converting to creatine. When you give a patient creatine, that S-adenosine methionine then can go through a pathway that goes to homocysteine, which goes to glutathione, which prevents inflammation.
Yeah.
So that's impressive that you're doing that and saying that.
Yeah. So since I was 14 years old, 5 grams in the morning, 5 at night. And so what, I'm 45 now, maybe 46. So I mean, we're talking over 30 years. And so I think that was a key thing. But really that, like, this is what kind of started me down the path. And then I think the other opportunity was I had to show up and speak every single weekend or every other weekend and present and write. And I think that piece of having to be intelligent enough to stand in front of 50 people and deliver information, like, that I think spurred a lot of this truth. Because, I don't want to ever be thought of as stupid. And I don't want to ever put myself in a position where people think I'm a fucking idiot. And so to be able to stand up there and present this information and then be able to debate people, because back in the day we set people that were like, this is bullshit. And I'd be like, all right, tell me why. Show it to me. Stand up. Give it to me. And we would battle people on the moment. So these guys were there. I tell you, every one of my coaches was battle hardened because we prepped them for this. I wanted them to go to battle for the bullshit. And so I think, like, just the fact that you put yourself into these situations, I think I told Brian, I have this observation that the day that you become, what I'd say was like the day you become, you stop becoming useful, you become useless. Mm-hmm. Which is what I observe with most NFL players. They just, like, stop doing what they do, and then they just become fucking useless.
No purpose.
Yeah, no purpose. So I had to literally show up and do this and force myself to do it and then learn an entirely new skill, which was strength conditioning and was physiology and performance, which wasn't what I was planning on doing. I was planning to go to law school. But I poured it into it and absorbed into this and said, all right, I can understand this information. It's a puzzle. It's a, you know, there's patterns. I look for patterns. Like, let's create this. And just, I think that opportunity and then all the other things, whether, you know, it be the podcast, which we've done, which has been an incredible resource in just terms of, like, meeting people, creating genealogy, and just basically finding new information.
We need to keep in touch for now, and I need to show you some stuff when we're done here. My son is calling me, by the way. I would like to keep in touch with you guys from now on, if you guys don't mind.
Yeah, we'll trade information. I was very impressed by what you did. I just never had the opportunity at SummerStrong because there's hundreds of people, and like you, we're just like constantly...
Actually, the SummerStrong is coming up again. When is it?
May 19th or something like that.
Yeah, actually, Brennan is coming Saturday. He's here tomorrow.
Bert.
He comes in tomorrow. Bert comes tomorrow, and then his father is being elected to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I got to head home. We're leaving tomorrow. My son's first coach pitch baseball game Saturday morning. I can't miss it. He says,
yeah, that's more important than anything.
But what's wild on another one, which is also kind of big, is he got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. A little boy did with no history of it, just spontaneously. So, like, but it's really interesting because it's super hit or miss. He's in this weird honeymoon stage.
Do they do GAP? Do they check antibodies and all that stuff, like in pancreas and everything?
Yeah, I mean, we've done pretty, I mean, Tom has done extensive testing within the gut and everything. And, of the, three different antibodies for it, one was high, one was negative, and one was borderline. And so he's in this weird honeymoon stage where he doesn't, like, the insulin use is super inconsistent. Like, he might take half an IU.
And what's his diet like?
He eats a Bernstein protocol. So okay. He eats high protein, he gets 30 grams of carbs, eats high protein, moderate fat. So he's about 58 pounds, and he's 6, and he eats about 125 grams of protein a day.
Do you try stem cells with him?
We did. We did exosomes and we did stem cells, and I think it actually made it worse. It accelerated a little bit. So we did a big dose of that, and we did stem cells, thinking that we could do it out. But the thing that's been most beneficial, have you ever heard of UVBI, ultraviolet blood irradiation?
Mm-hmm.
So back in the
30s... FDA approved that actually for certain conditions, especially for rheumatoid arthritis.
They were using it to cure polio and also to fix staph back in the 30s and the 40s.
It's FDA approved. That tells you something. Yeah. So it's interesting.
So we started because, the FDA approved it for autoimmune diseases. And so I wasn't going to, go through all these autoimmune protocols with all these different things. So we ended up finding that, and we were taking him to a doc, and then the guy retired and just disappeared. So I ended up just buying the machine. And we have one of our docs, parsing them, come over, and they do that IV on him once a week. And what's amazing is when we do it once a week, his insulin use goes home very, very low. And
interesting.
So, it's been one that's what we've been kind of managing it.
And he didn't have vaccines or anything?
No, we did not vaccinate him because my other daughter got injured. So when he was born, we didn't do any vaccines. And so what was wild was, we don't know if it was COVID or what, but we had a terrible freeze in Texas and all the cedar trees and everything broke. And I went out and I cut all the cedars. And all that pollen, I think, that cedar fever, got up in the air, and I think I got sick from it. And I think the kids might have got sick, and then he ended up developing
autoimmune.
Yeah, it ended up spiking him. But yeah, we have no history of it in the family. We did all this genetic stuff, and there was nothing. But what was wild in the genetic, you're going to appreciate this. So there's a group called Amsterdam Genomics, and it's they do a full comprehensive kind of genetic panel. And then they constantly shoot me information, and it's kind of this a living, breathing deal where I get information every single day about my genetics. I have a genetic condition called amylase deficiency,
mm-hmm.
100%. Basically, based upon my deficiency, I should not be able to do any physical exercise without extreme muscle pain, and any extreme working out would result in rhabdomyolysis.
Did you say amylase? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Because amylase is one of the main hormone or enzyme.
I'll send it to you that I have this, basically it's called an amylase deficiency, and I have 100% have it. And I remember the MIT researcher or the guy at MIT that's doing the genome, that's part of the project, calls me on the phone and he's like, you have a really rare genetic condition called amylase deficiency, and here's all the information. They've tested it and it results in this. And I'm like, well, I played in the NFL for 10 years, competed in the CrossFit games, and I lift weights and train every single day. And the guy got super quiet. And he goes, this is just one more day showing us we don't know fuck all about the genetics. And he goes, so you're telling, you 100% have this. So we don't understand the fact that there's something that's overriding this. Because based upon this, you shouldn't be able to do any physical exercise without such severe pain or rhabdomyolysis.
Interesting. The functionality of the amylase enzyme is to break down actually carbohydrates. So I'm trying to figure out how did he say... What will affect your workouts?
Yeah, I'll send you. I'll screen cap as soon as I get to my computer. And I'll send it back.
Send
to
me
you.
That because I'm very interested on that.
Yeah, I mean, just what's kind of wild. And actually, I talked to Tom about this the other day. Tom's like, we thought that genetics was going to give us a understanding of what's going on. He goes, right now,
genetics is the hardware. The software what decides what happens to your hardware.
It's the gut. And Tom made an interesting point. He's like, each gut bacteria can influence each gene in up to 400 different ways. He's like, so until we figure out, it's like a puzzle, right? You have the hardware, and now you have all this gut biome, all this bacteria in the body that's influencing all the genes. So, because we were talking about it for my son, I'm like, can we cure type 1 diabetes? And Tom's contention is, if the autoimmune condition turns off, the beta cells will heal themselves. And I always think too, why do they attack the beta cells? Why not the alpha cells? Why is it the beta cells? And why, the ancient Greeks wrote about type 1 diabetes. They called sugar wasting disease, where somebody died of pool of their own urine, or sugar urine. So it's just really
interesting case. I'd like to look at that because that's...
I'd love any help on it because if I could, I tell them every day, man, if I could trade places and take this from you, I would take this from you in a heartbeat.
It's a very hard disease, man. Well,
to try to tell a six-year-old that, trying to find, ice cream or, kids have keps and cake and, at parties. And, here's his mom over there with this, sugar-free brownie. It's fucking sad, dude. And I know, people are like, oh, it's fine. It's not fucking fine.
No.
To basically say to a six-year-old, you don't get sugar and you can't go to a birthday party and be with the other kids are having, it's fucking hard. I tell them all the time, and I'm like, dude, I would take this from you.
Okay.
So
I gotta go, John, because I gotta celebrate my son's birthday. But
well, thank you so much for being on Power Athlete Radio.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.